He turns towards me and comes swimming straight at me with his mouth open. And then this is like a 700-pound bull shark, 600-pound bull shark. I mean, these things are like big around as a garbage can. And he's coming at me with his mouth open from 6 feet away. It's like a fight to the death or something. Like, it's like you're thrown into the gladiator pit. When here's your sphere and there's your opponent, you might not want to be there. You might have, but you are already there. You know what I mean? There's no more. This is it. You've got dead fish on you. This shark is lit up. And all I'm thinking is, where are his buddies? That's what's going through my mind. It's like, oh my God, is there more? Is there more?
This is the Teeth Podcast. Wild animal attack stories firsthand from the survivors. I am Jeremy Carberry, wilderness kayak guide, animal handler, the survivor of a few attacks myself, and your host.
So I've watched shows on sharks and stuff. I watch those shows, which is stupid for anybody listening to this. If you're planning on diving and stuff like that, stop watching Shark Week. Just dead Shark Week. Don't do it to yourself. It just makes it worse. My friends are always telling me that because I'm always pulling out all these factoids and stuff. And they're like, why do you know it? Oh, I watch the show on sharks. Why do you watch those shows? Like, all you do is, and then sharks are on your brain all the time.
But you want to understand them. I mean,
yeah, that's what I say. But because at the end of the day, you don't know if you're going to get in and a freaking 20-foot great white isn't going to race in and cut you in half right at that moment that you enter the water. There's always the risk. It does happen. It is a fact. They're even here, dude. We have great whites here. We're not even supposed to have them here.
Here is the water surrounding the Florida Keys, and you're listening to Jason Tiller, a professional fisherman. He prefers the challenge and variety of commercial spearfishing, even though rod and reel fishing species like yellow snapper is more consistent, makes more money, and is a lot safer.
It's also by far the most boring thing in the world. I mean, you're catching little 1 to 2 pound fish, just repeatedly just pulling them out, throwing them out.
Because of the Keys' location between the Atlantic and the Caribbean oceans, keeping up with commercial fishing regulations is not easy.
You have to be like a fish lawyer to fish here. I mean, you've got two different oceans. I'm serious. Because if let's say you go out, you can go out into the Gulf and it's crappy. And then you could turn around and go out into the Atlantic Ocean, actually cross oceans.
Yeah.
So when you do that, you've completely changed fisheries. You've changed zones. Everything's different. There's fish that are out of season in one ocean, but they're in season in the other ocean.
In Jason's many years diving, he has seen and interacted with hammerheads, tigers, and bull sharks. Lots of bulls. He's been circled by groups of bull sharks on few different occasions, but fortunately, sharks don't really mess with scuba divers because of the noise, bubbles, and to a shark, a scuba diver just looks like a much bigger being than a free diver. Like me, Jason prefers free diving, but because of the depths he's hunting, he's usually using scuba gear. One of Jason's favorite places to be is the coral reefs surrounding Fort Jefferson, aka the Dry Tortugas National Park. Fort Jefferson is located about 70 miles or 112 kilometers west of the Florida Keys.
There's coral structures that are like two-story houses with tunnels that you can swim through and just unbelievable stuff. Wow. Unbelievable.
One of the reasons this area is so great is that it's just outside the Dry Tortugas National Park and Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary. This is a no-take zone, which affects much more ocean than what is inside the boundaries. The benefits of having the sanctuary extend out to all the surrounding ocean as well, making this region some of the healthiest coral reefs anywhere in the Caribbean. Other marine protected areas in California, for instance, have the exact same effect and create a healthier ecosystem for miles and miles all around them. The smarter fisher people know this and advocate for no-take zones because it creates healthier oceans for everyone. It's a win-win for conservationists and fisher people alike. In 2014, a 44-year-old Jason Tiller and two other spear fishermen are wrapping up a multi-day fishing trip about 80 miles from anything resembling civilization out by Fort Jefferson.
I was on one of these rock piles out west by the fort. It was the third day of our dives. It was our last day. We were going for a three-day trip. It was the last day of the three-day trip. And it was my last dive of the day. I was the last guy diving of the last guy of the day. So it was probably 5 p.m., 6 p.m. Okay. In the summertime.
Okay.
Which we always call it Shark 30, you know, because sharks are more active at dawn and at dusk.
Yep.
Is their most active period. And you usually seem to encounter them early in the morning or late in the afternoon. Well, this was late in the afternoon. Sun's getting low in the sky. Water's 72 degrees, 73 degrees. Visibility, 80 feet,
wow.
70 feet, at least 70, maybe 80 feet. You couldn't see the bottom from the surface, but once you got down to about 20 or 30 feet, you could see the bottom.
Okay, wow.
So it's really good visibility. It's very warm in the water here, especially in the summer. I'm wearing a 3-millimeter wetsuit and warm. You know what I mean? Just warm enough in the water. Get out of the water. You're actually hot. You have to take your suit off quick because you're like getting hot.
You could call Jason's scuba techniques as alternative or bare bones.
I don't use any kind of inflatable BC or a wing or anything. I'm using just weights to keep me down.
The BCD or buoyancy compensator device does just that. Makes up for changes in buoyancy related to different depths and different amounts of air in your tanks. Not using a BCD requires considerably more diving skill and for most people is not worth the extra effort and risk. Other than opting for no BCD to help control buoyancy, Jason will also dive deeper than what is recommended on mix air. Nitrogen narcosis is when air becomes toxic after a maximum depth of 130 feet or 40 meters. Jason will exceed this recommendation by about 50%, diving over 60 meters from the surface around 200 feet deep, exposing himself to air that essentially becomes poisonous to the human body.
I happen to have a really, really high tolerance for nitrogen narcosis. I've been to 200 feet. And still remember what I was doing. But you feel high. You feel like you're stoned or something. You know what I mean? You're high on weed or something. You're like, what I do is I actually tell myself, I have this little like thing that I do in my head. Where's your gun? Are your bands loaded? Is your safety off? Which way are you swimming? Is your bands loaded? Is your safety off? Which way are you swimming? Is your bands loaded? I just keep repeating that in my head, like a little mantra. And that's how I remember what I'm doing down there. Because you just forget what you're doing. You'll just swim around. You'll look at this giant fish and go, wow, look at that freaking huge fish. Cool. And you'll just forget to shoot them. Like, that's what happens to people at deeper than like 130, 140, almost everybody. And like I said, I've actually literally dove, literally with a Navy SEAL and had him. And he was like, it was like a dumb two-year-old down there at 140. He couldn't even... You know, if you'd have gave him a math problem, what's 2 + 2? He couldn't have told you 4.
Wow.
Like, he was literally lost. You know what I mean? So, and I know in any sort of a physical test of endurance or anything, he would have had me beat. He could have run flat out at top speed for a mile. He can jump out of an airplane with a whatever and do all this stuff that Navy SEALs do. And he couldn't handle 140 feet. His brain turned to mush and he was just swimming around in circles. He literally pulled the trigger on this fish. I see this fish. I look over at him and he's aiming at it. So I'm like, oh, cool. And I'm looking at the gun and I can see that he doesn't have the bands loaded. And I'm like, oh no, he's not going to do it. And what does he do? He pulls the trigger and the spear just like comes really slowly and just falls out of the gun. Like, thump. And he looks at me and I look at him and I'm like, oh dude, I, like, swim over and I shoot the fish. And I'm like, oh my God, this guy is freaking out there. And then the whole rest of the dive, he did not manage to get his gun reloaded. He played with that gun for the entire rest of the dive. Trying to put the spear in and wrap the bands. And there's like an order to reloading a spear gun. You have to like put it through the bands. And then you have, you know, like there's like a certain order. And if you skip step 2 and go to step 3 and then continue on from there, you'll get to step 5 and realize, oh, I forgot step 2. Now you have to go back. You have to unload the gun and start over again. So he's reloading the gun, trying to get this gun loaded again, and he never managed to get it reloaded in the entire dive. So I know that about myself. I have a extremely high tolerance for deep diving. Like, there's people that are going to listen to this and they're like, this guy's 200 feet on air? Like, that's like, nobody does that. Oh, it's stupid. It's just some people can do that and some people can't. And it's just something you're born with, and you're lucky if you can. Now, don't get me wrong. Anything deeper than about 160, 170, I'm feeling it. But like I said, I do this little mantra in my head. And all the time I'll be like, is my gun loaded? And I'll look at my gun. It's not loaded. Oh, my God. And I have to like load my gun. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't realize it wasn't loaded until I said that in my head and then looked at the gun. Like, so I have to do that. Is my gun loaded? Is the safety off? And which way am I swimming?
Jason is about 100 feet or 30 meters under the surface of the water, scuba diving alone, while the other two guys are on the boat for support.
I'm doing my last dive of the day. I'm on this spot. I've been swimming around. I got a big stringer of fish. Usually, I'll actually, you know, you swim with your fish on your side on a stringer, so you're actually like a big piece of bait. You know, you're swimming around this dead fish. I've already been shooting fish for, you know, whatever, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I'm nearing the end of my dive, and I see this hogfish, and I shoot it. Now, as soon as I shoot this fish, it's like, it wasn't slow motion. It was like speed motion. This shark must have been just off to my left side, out of my vision where I couldn't see him. I didn't know he was there. It was a bull shark. And he, as my spear hits this fish, whap, this shark comes flying in from the left and just grabs his, just violence, just starts shaking, like, just starts going ballistic on this fish.
Jason was so excited to be telling me this story and making up sounds of what was going on with the shark that he literally didn't let me get a word in. You'll hear me say, so this was over and over again, but I don't even care because the story is so good.
It was like as big as they get.
Okay.
The world's record for a bull shark is like 10 foot and change, right?
Okay, so
figure 11 feet. That's the world's record. Bull sharks tend to get about 8-9 feet long, and then they just get fatter and fatter and fatter and fatter and fatter.
And this is a
this was a fat one. Yeah, he was, you know what I mean? I guess like a 10-foot one that's like literally world record size would be like 1,000 or 1,200 pounds. So that would make this one 600 or 700 pounds, okay. You know, 9 feet long or something, you know?
Okay.
I could be off like by 150 pounds or something with that. It's hard to say.
There was definitely a lot of fish bleeding into the water, hanging off of Jason, which definitely attracted this big bull shark to begin with. The hogfish that Jason just shot was about 3 or 4 pounds and only took the 9-foot-long bull shark a few bites to swallow it. Jason is still to this day getting over the speed of that shark.
When he came in and grabbed that fish, the violence, the extreme violence of that was just unbelievable. And he came in like, just starts freaking shaking. I was just like, what the? I've never seen a shark do that. How fast he came, it was almost like he started, it was like the, you know, like when the guy in a track and field event shoots the pistol off and everybody takes off running.
Yep.
It was almost like he took off running when I pulled the trigger. I mean, I don't know how he got to that fish so fast. It was weird. It was almost like the spear hit the fish, and then the shark was there. Extreme violence. Yeah, like, I mean, he had to be right there next to me when he came out of the mist. I mean, he must have been following me. He must have just been right there next to me.
Year is 1916. This is the year the U.S. National Park Service is created by Congress. The six Brown brothers are recording the song you hear now called the Bullfrog Blues. And it is widely believed sharks pose no threat to humans. Scientists and experts say that sharks are incapable of hurting a person and dismiss any reports of shark attacks on humans as tall tales or urban legends. Based on observed shark behavior around humans, it is safe to conclude that sharks are often afraid of and often avoid us. It is not safe to conclude that sharks are always afraid of and always avoid us. The summer of 1916, that all changed. The summer of 1916 brought at least 3 deaths and 4 attacks to New Jersey around and in the Mattawan Creek. These are the events that influenced Peter Benchley to write the novel Jaws. The scientists and esteemed experts hypothesized that the chewed up bodies that were showing up could not have been from a shark, but were happening from a murderous sea turtle. A sea turtle. Sea turtles eat algae. Murderous turtles was the common belief among the public at the time because people believed the scientists' hypothesis as a settled scientific conclusion, which was obviously a mistake. The scientists and public eventually couldn't avoid the evidence that sometimes sharks do attack humans. And as us human beings do, we go from one extreme of believing sharks are never murdering to the other extreme of believing sharks are always murdering, causing a hysteria which reached a peak in 1975 when the film Jaws was released. That summer, sharks were caught in the area and their stomachs were cut open looking for human remains, but there were none, and it's unclear if they caught the shark or sharks responsible for the attacks. Some of the attacks happened in fresh water, and since bull sharks are the only big predatory shark known to survive indefinitely in fresh water, a bull or multiple bull sharks were more than likely responsible for the 4 attacks that most people now credit to a great white, thanks in part to Jaws. We now know that bull sharks have the highest level of testosterone and aggression of any shark. There have been over 100 confirmed bull shark attacks on humans, and a few dozen of them have been fatal. This puts the bull shark in 3rd place behind great whites and tiger sharks for the most confirmed human attacks and deaths. So you definitely wouldn't want to have a 9-foot-long bull shark being aggressive around you 100 feet under the surface of the ocean, 80 miles plus from the nearest hospital or medical care. Which brings us back to Jason, who happens to be in exactly that situation himself.
Just starts going ballistic on this fish. I see this happen, and I'm like, whoa, oh my God. Blowing out bubbles, and I kick up off the bottom, and I come up about 15 feet up off the bottom. Now the shark's below me, circling, going crazy down there, eating this fish. With spearfishing like that, like with sharks, usually you want to own your fish. You want to grab it, pull it to you, and own it, like hug it to your body, like, you can't have it. I'm gonna, you know, it's mine, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. But if the shark's already bit the fish, if he's already attacked it, you don't want to do that. You let him have it at that point. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's too late for that. This was definitely too late for that situation. He was on it, wow, just chowing it. So I go up off the bottom, about 15 feet off the bottom. The shark's circling underneath me, all pissed off. And I can see all that's left of this fish is the head is just still on the spear. He's already eaten the rest of that fish. And so I decided, well, I'm just going to leave this. I got my gun in my hands. The line is going down to the bottom where the spear is down there, where the shark is. And that head is still on the thing. So I'm thinking, well, go ahead and eat the head. I'm not going to pull the head up and fight you for the head. I don't want the head. Finish the fish. You know what I mean? Is what I'm thinking, right? So he does. He finishes the head. He goes in, grabs it, shakes it, pulls it, gets it off the end of the spear. So I pull the spear up. When I do that, the shark comes, like, looks up at me. And just comes rocketing up at me at like freaking 3/4 speed, you know, of what they can go. I mean, at full speed, they're like lightning bolts, you know what I mean? Wow. But he came up at, I'd say 3/4 speed, which is really fast. And he's coming straight up at me. And I've got the spear is out, played out off the gun. I don't have the spear in the gun. So to poke him in the face with it, it's not that effective without the spear in the gun. Yeah. All you've got is a stick. So I got this stick with the rubber bands on the end, and he's coming up at me, and I'm like, oh, geez, like trying to kick and pull and get away from, but you can't get out of your own way fast enough, so now in scuba especially. So I'm like, make just this bizarre convulsive motion in the water, and he just comes right up at me, mouth open, literally gonna bite me, comes right up to like my ankles, and then just turns sideways, and now he's circling me in the water at my level, about 10 feet out. And he's full posture. He's got his fins down. He's got his back arched. And he's trying to show me how big he is. You know, I mean, that's what they do. They sort of fluff themselves up almost like a cat or something. You know how like a cat or you know, their hair will rise up on their back or whatever, and they're trying to make themselves larger. Well, that's what sharks do. But they posture. They bow their back up into like this bowed posture. And then they have their fins down. They kind of turn their head left and then turn their head right, sort of like their head's moving in this like real robotic fashion. You can just tell that there's something, like when you see it, you know it. I'm just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Now I've got power heads on me. I've got power. I've actually got a YouTube channel with a thing on how to make your own power head. You should watch my video. It's kind of funny. We make slip-on power heads. What they are, it's like basically a bullet in a tube, and you slip it onto the end of your spear. And the end of the tip of the spear is the firing pins, sort of. So like if you shoot it at them, or just more likely push it at them, like bump it into them, it fires the bullet off. Boom. And I mean, you can theoretically kill them with it if you hit them in the right spot, but it's more likely you're just going to send them on their way. You know what I mean? I'll keep a couple of these in my sleeve, in my wetsuit, in the sleeve, in a baggie. And if I need them, I can pull them out, but I have to have the spear on the gun in order to use it, because the spear. Now, so what I'm doing is, while this shark's circling me, I'm pulling my spear up to me, trying to get it into the gun. Because I know that I need it to protect myself from him. I get the spear kind of in my hands. Now I've got like this line all kind of wrapped around me and everything like that. I'm all kind of tangled up in it. At that moment, he turns towards me and comes swimming straight at me with his mouth open. And then this is like a 700-pound bull shark, 600-pound bull shark. I mean, these things are like big around as a garbage can. And he's coming at me with his mouth open from 6 feet away. Not that fast, luckily. I'm just thinking, because you learn to like, you got to like fight them. I mean, that's what this was. This was like a fight. It's like a fight to the death or something. It's like you're thrown into the gladiator pit when here's your spear and there's your opponent. You might not want to be there. You might have, but you are already there. You know what I mean? There's no more. This is it. You know what I mean? You've got dead fish on you. This shark is lit up. And all I'm thinking is, where are his buddies? You know what I mean? That's what's going through my mind. It's like, oh my God, is there more? Is there more? Because sometimes there'll be more.
In the span of 90 seconds, Jason Tiller is subject to multiple attacks from a 9-foot-long bull shark near the bottom of the ocean, with only the dull wooden part of his spear gun for protection. His raised heartbeat and creased breathing is burning through oxygen faster than usual. But that's the least of his concerns. The number one threat is the shark, which is aggressively circling and lunging at him repeatedly. The number two threat is getting bubbles in his brain from surfacing too quickly. What would you do in this situation? You can't swim straight up to the surface because the bends will kill you. You can't stay down at the bottom with this shark, because it sure seems like it wants to kill you. Speaking of which, the shark is now moving in on you again, this time at your eye level and with its mouth wide open. What do you do? You gotta decide now.
So I stick the spear gun right in his face. Bam! I try to hit you like I'm gonna poke him with it. And he mouths the end of it. Like he's got his mouth open, and I stick it right in his mouth, and I first thought he was gonna bite it and like clamp down on it and shake it, but he didn't. He just sort of like kind of mouthed it loosely and then turned away and continued circling me.
Bulls are the most dangerous species of shark because they bite first, ask questions later, and never seem to have any kind of strategy.
not only don't I know what he's going to do next, he doesn't know what he's going to do next. You know what I mean? It's just, they're just big and stupid, and they sort of have this blank look to them. So now I'm like, so I'm trying to, oh my God. And I'm trying to get this spear into the gun. I get the spear into the gun. But now, I'm going up to the boat. I'm not doing a safety stop. I'm not doing anything. I'm getting out of here.
As Jason frantically ascends toward the surface, the bull continues to circle and attack him on the way up. From this point on, everything happens really fast. Jason just wants to get out of the ocean as soon as humanly possible. He manages to keep the gun between him and the shark as he kicks up. He reaches the surface after a few minutes and urgently yells to his buddies on the boat to come get him ASAP.
Yo, come over here. I'm waving my arm. Shark, come here.
In between yelling at his buddies to make it quick, he is still fighting off the shark.
Got my head in the water and I'm kind of poking at him and stuff, and he's circling me.
It can be an awkward process for new divers getting themselves and their bulky scuba gear out of the ocean and back onto the boat. But Jason does this multiple times a day, and his buddies do too. So they wasted no time, and he was out of the water and away from the shark right away.
And I managed to get out of the water without getting bit, but I didn't do a safety stop.
I asked Jason how long it would usually take him to go from 100 feet to the surface, including the safety stop.
Okay, well, you can... as fast as you can swim up, and then you need to stop at 15 feet for 3 minutes. That's your safety stop.
Okay.
So you figure 2 minutes, 3 minutes to get up there if you're kicking real hard, or if you do something like, you know, throw your weight belt off or something so you just go floating up,
yeah.
Which you really don't want to do that.
Because then you can't stop once you get to 50.
No, because you can't stop once you get to the right depth, especially me because I don't use any kind of inflatable BC or a wing or anything. I'm using just weights to keep me down.
Okay.
So I'm, you know, I have to swim up. So yeah, so you're talking maybe let's say 5 minutes for a safe ascent from 100 feet. And I probably took 4 minutes or something, but I didn't stop at 20 feet. I stopped at 80 feet for a minute.
Yeah.
And then spent the next minute and a half fighting him and kicking up the whole time, not doing my stop. I got out of the water, and the first thing I feel is a crushing weight on my chest, like a fat guy sitting on my chest. And I'm like, oh my God, this is it. And so I freaking laid down and put my feet up. Because if you're going to get an embolism, if you got air in your blood, it's going to go to the highest spot. You don't want that highest spot to be your head. This is sort of like an old legend. I don't know if it's really real, but divers believe it. I believe it. I laid down on the deck of the boat and put my legs up because I figured I want those bubbles to go up into my legs, not into my brain. Because you basically got fizz in your blood at that point. It's like shaking up a soda bottle and taking off the cap too quick, you know, and then all that soda exploding out with fizz. That's what's going on inside you. So I laid down. I got on Pier 02. I'm telling the guys what happened, and they're like not really believing me. They're sort of like, oh yeah. Like, no, dude, I'm telling him, this is fucking joke. It's gonna eat my little... yeah, really? Okay. Mm-hmm, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, not like literally not believing me, but thinking that I'm over exaggerating the situation or whatever. But luckily, it was time to go in, so we were going to head in anyway. But we're 3.5 hour ride from home, so there wasn't. It wasn't like if I was close to home, I probably would have made him call Coast Guard, and I would have had him come get me on the helicopter and doing the whole thing. But because we were riding home anyway, and I was so far out, let's just run home. You know what I mean? And this was in our smaller boat. It was a center console, 27-foot AmeriCat. It's like a catamaran center console type boat. So it runs pretty fast. So we're running home at like 30 miles an hour and we got to go about 80 miles.
Wow.
So yeah. So we're 80 miles out because the fort's 75 miles west of here. So figure we were about 80 miles out. So it took about 2.5 to 3 hours and the weight came off my chest. It started to feel a little better. And my feet, my legs, my calves were like hard and they didn't feel they were hard and they hurt. My legs, my feet and my legs hurt. And I just didn't feel well. So I just came home and did the stupidest thing I could have done. I lay down on the couch and just went to sleep.
Wait, why didn't your friends make you go to the hospital?
They should have, but they're like, it was Steele was on the boat. He'll probably listen to this a lot, but he's the ultimate guy who's never, nothing's ever going to happen to me guy.
Steele Rocket is a professional spear fisherman who is also mentioned in a very soon to be released Teeth podcast episode, which also happens in Florida and involves a diver's miraculous escape from an alligator that bit onto his head. So stay tuned for that.
And they weren't there. They didn't see what I came up to. And no, we weren't being smart. And I felt like I had this crushing weight on my chest at first, but within 20 minutes, the weight went away and I'm feeling better and everything was normal. And I was able to, unload the fish off the boat and get my gear and rinse. I did everything I was supposed to do. I felt like I wanted to go to sleep. Like I just didn't feel good. I was 3 days of fishing. I was exhausted from the boat and all the motion in the water and all the, just ready to, eat something, relax, eat some comfort food, chill out, be nice and warm and dry, without salt water and the crack of your butt and all that. You know what I mean? So 3 days of being wet and being in a wetsuit, and I just didn't want to believe that I was going to die or whatever. So I went to sleep. I woke up the next morning and I knew something was wrong. My calves were hard and swollen. So I called the hospital that has the chamber. I'm like, yo, I don't feel good. And they're like, well, what'd you do? I'm like, 100-foot dive. I came up, no safety stop. They're like, what? They're like, you didn't come straight here. They're like, you need to get, they're like, do you have anyone to drive you? And I'm like, no. They're like, can you drive yourself? Are you okay? They're like, you need to call us every freaking 10 minutes on the way up and you need to come here right now. They're like, we got another guy we got to put in the chamber. We'll wait for you and put you both in together because you're more worse than him. They're like, you could die. Like you need to come here right now, right now. Like, don't do anything else. Get in the car and come here right now. So I drove there at like maybe 8, 9 in the morning and got in the chamber. And it's weird because when you go in the chamber, it's what they do is they pressurize you back down to the depth that you were at. And then they simulate bringing you up slowly.
The hyperbaric chamber is our best treatment for decompression sickness, also known as the bends. The pressure of the chamber while breathing pure oxygen allows Jason's body to get rid of the toxic nitrogen that can be deadly. The entire process takes hours and requires a doctor to be with him to monitor his vitals throughout the process. When it is over, he feels better and is better. Jason is very, very lucky.
Now, had I come up as fast as I could from 100, I would be dead, for no doubt.
Yeah.
Like that's a, what I mean? So the amount of bent that I got where it was just in my ankle, my calves or whatever, that's like a low level. But probably part of that is because I laid on the boat and also breathed Puro 2. Had I not had Puro 2 on the boat, it probably would have went worse there. And also, it's also your constitution. Everybody's different. And they say you're more susceptible to getting bent after you've been bent. Like it's sort of something about having it happen to you that your constitution to avoiding it, or whatever, your ability to resist the bubbles in your head or whatever, have now lessened somehow, and you're more likely to have it happen again somehow. Yeah. It's weird. I don't know why that is. They warned me about that though.
It's also very fortunate that it was only one shark.
Two or three bulls came up on me at that moment. I mean, I almost more than likely would have got bit and probably killed, because bulls are like unbelievably powerful. I mean, they say that they really do kill more than the white sharks do. Yeah. It's just that they get mistaken identity, and a lot of their victims never live to tell the tale. You know what I mean? So no one really knows what happened to Joe. You know what I mean? But Joe really was killed by bull sharks.
Jason's advice to spear fishermen is always protect your fish from aggressive sharks.
Well, if you give them your fish, they get more aggressive. They'll take your fish. Like you'll say, drop the fish and give it to them. I mean, that's what caused this problem, is that he ate my fish. And he's already been fed. He's already been, he's gotten his, so he's, his senses are on level 10 now. You know what I mean?
He's not satisfied. He's just even hungrier.
Right, right. He's just, he's now been fed. He knows that there's food. You know what I mean? He knows there's food. He doesn't think there might be food.
And he knows you're the source of the food.
Yeah, you've got food. You and you smell like food. You get told that by the old guys. Like, don't feed the sharks. Like, don't, you need to own your fish. If you, if possible, you keep the fish from them. You don't allow them to have it. If they're going to, even if they're coming at you and trying to attack you and stuff, you don't give them your fish. You don't think, oh, okay, here, just take it. I'm sorry. You know, I give up. You win. Give him your fish. Cause what's going to happen next is he's going to go down. He's going to eat that fish and then he's coming right back to you and he's going to be five times more aggressive and more pissed off and angry. And not only that, if you feed them, the other sharks in the area hear this commotion. They come in. Now they want some too. So maybe they haven't been fed at all. And you know what I mean? So now you're really, it just gets worse. You don't want to feed the fish.
Compared to fishing, chances of being attacked by a shark go way down when swimming or snorkeling. Jason's advice to non-fisher people is to be aware of your surroundings anytime you are swimming or snorkeling in the ocean, and don't even enter the ocean where fishing is going on, whether it's spearfishing or rod and reel, because dead or distressed fish brings in hungry sharks like nothing else. Jason doesn't wish any bad things on the bull shark that almost ended his life. About 2 weeks after the attack, he was in the water again, spearfishing. After the interview, I got a follow-up message from Jason, and he told me that this experience has reinforced his understanding that when he is in the ocean, that realm belongs to the sharks, and he is not the top dog down there. He also said bulls will test you, especially if you have fish on you, and they are not complicated thinkers, and also not scared of anything. Jason continues to respect the sharks and loves learning about them still. He continues to watch Shark Week. Lastly, he told me that if there were no scary sharks at all, spearfishing wouldn't be as cool as it is. The wilderness of the ocean is what makes it so cool to me. According to Jason, the story you just heard is not the most terrifying shark encounter he's had. He told me about another incident involving a 14-foot or 4-meter-long tiger shark while also diving at 100 feet out by Fort Jefferson. I'm going to post that story as an exclusive mini-episode for everyone who signs up for the email list at theteethpod.com. Link is in the show notes below. It's free. The only thing I do is really send out 2 emails a month max, kind of letting you know about new episodes, exclusive photos, and other content. If you're listening to this episode after the fact, you could still sign up for that email list and then email me. I'll send you a private link to the tiger shark story, which will make the hair stand up on the back of your neck. If you want even more of Jason, I've linked his YouTube video below of how to make your own powerheads. You know, underwater explosive missiles you can use to protect yourself from sharks, which is about the most Florida you can get. For more spearfishing stories and information, the 2 best podcasts on the topic are the Noob Spearo podcast with Shrek and the Spear Factor with Brett Whitman. Links to both of those are also in the show notes. The Teeth podcast is produced by Scott Neary and myself. Music is by Davey Chedwigan and Joshua Lopez. Thank you so much for listening and sharing this episode with a friend. I hope you get outside today to enjoy the wildlife while simultaneously giving it the space and respect it deserves.
Manny Pulig was the guy. He was in those videos on the Wild Boys, and he was in the Jackass video.
Okay.
He's the guy with the long hair. He looks like, they call him Tarzan.
Okay.
He has the long hair, and he dives in like a little Speedo.
Yeah.
but he like catches alligators and does all like by hand,
yeah,
like at night in the water. And he does all this crazy shark stuff. I know him. He's from Big Pine. And I was talking to him one day about that, about sharks and riding sharks and stuff like that. And I asked him about that, about bull sharks. And he's like, nobody rides bull sharks. He's like, you don't touch them. You don't mess with them. You don't grab them. You do not get in their space. You don't do any of that. You could do that with a hammerhead, and they don't get mad. Like if you ride his fin or whatever, and you don't like it anymore, and he like turns around, you let him go, and he'll just kind of swim off. But a bull shark will get like pissed off, and like they're very unpredictable, and they like, no, like you don't, nobody rides bull sharks. Nobody. Do people riding those giant great whites, deep blue and stuff. They go down and grab the fin and stuff. Yeah. Go down. You'll never see. I challenge you to find a video of someone going down and doing that with a freaking 8-foot bull shark.